All right, welcome into the Chris Collinsworth podcast featuring the great Richard Sherman and new Los Angeles Chargers head coach, Brandon Staley. It was a blast to do this, first of all. But the pre-podcast conversation between Richard and Brandon was so good. We're going to clip that out and put it at the end of the podcast for a little bonus coverage. They were just talking ball. It was fun to listen to. We're presented by our good friends at DraftKings and DraftKings Sportsbook, where you can use promo code PFF right now for a chance to bet $1 to win $100 if the basketball team of your choice makes a single three-pointer. Just one, and you win 100-1 odds on that $1. Sounds like a piece of cake, so go make it happen at DraftKings Sportsbook. And today, of course, we're joined by our very special guest, Chargers head coach Brandon Staley. He's one of the next group of boy wonder NFL head coaches. And boy, we talked about everything, Justin Herbert, how his play at quarterback is going to translate in the new system, the decision to join the division with the Kansas City Chiefs and Patrick Mahomes, and how they might defend that. Of course, he was the defensive coordinator for the Rams, and they had the number one defense in all of football. And we'll talk about similar roles that he has in mind for Derwin James, sort of the Jalen Ramsey role, if you will, with the Rams. So here we go. We're off with Brandon Staley and Richard Sherman. All right, here we go with the new head coach of the Los Angeles Chargers, a guy who took a job and did not have to move. I have never heard of this in the history of the National Football League. Brandon Staley goes from defensive coordinator of the number one defense in the NFL in his very first year as defensive coordinator in the NFL. Brandon Staley, congratulations on being the new head coach of the Chargers. And you didn't have to move, but you did move. Is that the latest we're hearing?
Yes. Thank you. Thank you guys for having me. A move, but not one that's very far. I know one certainly my wife appreciates a lot. And, you know, I think that we'll definitely deal with that hour and a half drive anytime, as opposed to flying across the country in a snowstorm. So we're very, very fortunate. And I guess there is a first time for everything.
Richard, I had to break up you and Brandon because you guys had a common bond of trying to figure out how you're going to stop the Kansas City Chiefs going into this next season here. You guys were having a good off-air discussion about Patrick Mahomes and company.
Yeah, I think it's one of those things where the way you got to stop them, everybody's like, man, you got to have the greatest corners. You got to lock them down. And it's really just limiting explosives, keeping the top over defense, tackling well, really speedy, athletic linebackers that can cover and deal with Kelsey in their backs when they isolate you and go empty, and keeping constant pressure on Pat, you know, with four. Because as soon as you put five, you're opening up holes in the defense and you're giving him a chance, because if he scrambles out or he finds a way to extend the play, and put your defense in a hole and put you behind the eight ball. And I think that, you know, obviously he's going to have to play him twice a year. That defense is really, really built well that he has right now to deal with him. You know, they anytime you got a Bosa, you got a shot.
Yeah, it's interesting that, you know, everybody's been talking about no Aaron Donald for you now, no Jalen Ramsey, but Joey Bosa and Derwin James hopefully comes back for you this season playing, I assume, would do a little bit of that, some of those star roles, right? The Ramsey, you converted Jalen Ramsey from just an outside cornerback into that inside interior kind of do everything kind of player.
Yeah, that's certainly what we were hoping for, is to get our guys doing what they do best. And I think, you know, Richard can attest, sometimes when you're an outside corner, you don't get a lot of action, so you're really not impacting the game. So what we wanted to be able to do is get Jalen close to the action. And I think that's really why we did it. And he's certainly got that versatility from a skill set standpoint. But I think the other thing Richard can attest to is it's one thing if you're good enough to play in there, but then mentally, can you handle it? Can you handle it in both spots? Can you play outside either way? Can you play star? And I think that Jalen's got that unique ability to do it all and do it well. And I think that we were able to use him, you know, the way we felt like was best, that could feature his game, but that also could give us a great chance to win. And I think that certainly he had a special year, and, you know, certainly one of the biggest reasons why I'm here.
Hey, Richard, one of the big topics of conversation with Brandon getting this job was, okay, well, but we've got Justin Herbert and he had a good first year and we want to continue his development and you're hiring a defensive coach and why not an offensive coach and a quarterback guru? He played quarterback. He was a quarterback for the Dayton Flyers for 2 years and they won like 16 games in 2 years. And to the best of my knowledge, Brandon, I don't think you've ever coached offense, have you? I mean, from playing quarterback to, I looked through your whole resume that took you all over the place. I didn't see any offensive coaching at all in that resume.
Now, offensive coaching spirit, you know, offensive coaching spirit all those years. But there's another guy in this call that was an offensive player turned defensive player, you know. And so I think it's been a big advantage for me how you see the game. You know, I'd be interested to hear Richard. I've kind of read about like his story and know some people that were with him at Stanford when he was a wideout initially. But just I think that seeing the lens, you know, I think football is such a team game and you being able to understand how 22 pieces work together and then how it works in the kicking game. I think that my quarterback background has certainly, I think, shaped the way I view defensive football for sure. And the way I coach the guys, because the way I try to coach the guys on defense is like they coach the quarterback. And being able to operate at that speed of a Tom Brady, at that speed of a Drew Brees, and getting your guys to think like them and see what they see. So I've always tried to, you know, have that in my game so that I can share that with the guys so that hopefully they can be as good as they can be.
And that's exactly right. Because when you've played offensive football, then you understand schematically what you're trying to do, how you're trying to attack cover two, cover four, cover et cetera, et cetera. And you understand conceptually how you can get there, you know, I mean, how you can split the half, man zone side, et cetera, et cetera. But West Coast offense is fundamentally base foundation for just about every offense in our league. So you're going to get the normal bunch formation, normal spot spacing, the 2x2 open formation, normal dragons and curl flat, no matter how people dress it up and OVS, and dance it up, it's always going to get to the same spots. Even with Sean and Kyle and LaFleur in that system, they've just condensed West Coast down. Same motion, West Coast, Bill Walsh, but they've just condensed everything down. So they're like, hey, these receivers are having trouble getting off press. Let's eliminate the press, condense everybody, and make these linebackers work, which is cool until somebody figures out a way to cap the defense and bring pressure, and bring pressure off the edges. So it's really awesome that you have that perspective and it gives you such an advantage from both sides.
Yeah. And I think that what you're always trying to do is connect with your guys. And I think that like just listening to Richard on this call is why, you know, I listen to Ramsey so much and listen to the players because they just have a really rich perspective too. And I think when you can kind of combine forces to say, okay, how do we need to play this team this week? How do we need to play this formation this week and really kind of connect and collaborate? I think that you'd be surprised what you find out as a coach. And that's something that I've tried to do is really listen a lot and make it a partnership. And I think like just like we're talking about offensively is, you know, us trying to figure out how that team's trying to beat us that week and us being able to, you know, our guys know our coverages. They know our pressure systems. They know our packages. Being able to have, you know, shared ownership and how we want to do it. Because if you would listen to Richard just talk about how to defend Pat Mahomes, he's got a really rich perspective, you know, and he's defended a lot of these people. So what you got to try and do is, I think, at least that's my belief system, is partner up with your guys to put the best plan together.
It's so funny. We were just talking about how much the NFL has changed in that way a week ago on this podcast, talking about how collaborative it is, almost NBA-like. In taking those star players and helping each other understand, because no matter how good you are standing on the sideline, and there are some great coaches standing on that sideline, Richard, you and I both know there's nothing like standing on that field. There are things that happen on the field that you'll never sense being on that sideline.
Right, exactly. And that's what I was laughing about, because we literally were just talking about the evolution of from the old school, hey, players just do what I tell you to do and do it how I tell you to do it, to the conversation Salah and I would have and on the field. And we're in it. And I'm like, hey, they're double counting us. Hey, they're pushing us this way. He's forcing the safeties this way. So let's sit opposite hash bring him off that look, bring him this way. And us being able to have a great discussion and evolve our coverage, evolve the way we're trying to defend this team in game, and not just have a rigid discussion and a rigid philosophy where it's like, hey, no matter what I say, no matter what I'm seeing out there, it's going to be the same. You're going to attack the same way. And I think that's what's making the game so much better. And that's what's going to allow for a lot more success.
Yeah. And I think, you know, like when you go to like Aaron Donald and you're talking about like a rush plan on third downs and stuff like that, and you go to AD and you treat him like a quarterback, like, hey, AD, what are you comfortable with? What do you like? You know, he's going to make that work. He's going to make that work. And guess what? He's going to help his other teammates make it work. And it's the same thing, like, you know, with Ramsey, John Johnson, who was a stud for us this year. Those two guys really quarterback in our secondary is, though, like he's talking about in the heat of the battle. You know, and I've been fortunate, you know, and Richard, you know, obviously, you know, a lot of them, but like Khalil Mack, Von Miller, you know, all these guys that I've been fortunate to coach, Nakeem Hicks, Kyle Fuller, all these guys that have helped me get here today. They see some things that you will never see as a coach. And when you build relationships with them, you will trust what they see. And then that's going to allow you as a coach to click in to your skill set to sort of help that unit or that team be as good as they can be. And I think, you know, anybody that knows anything about the game knows that the true artistry happens with the players. And, I think the best coaches figure that out. And then what the best coaches do is try and create those partnerships, those relationships that can, you know, really help you in good times and in tough times. And it gives you this steady way that can allow you to hopefully be the last one standing. And I agree with both of you. That's where the game is headed. And it's where it's probably always should be, you know, always should have been.
I got a huge question for you. What made you give John Johnson a green dot? When I saw that, I was like, okay, that is different than I've ever seen. And I didn't see it until the Seattle game. You guys were playing Seattle in Seattle. And I saw him come in the middle of defense and call it and then back up. And then I saw him come back. I said, wait a minute. I know they don't have him calling the defense.
Yeah. It's so Richard, it was something that he's, you know, a tremendous communicator. He's got the respect of all his teammates, and he was a guy that was never going to leave the field. And our linebacker situation, as you guys know, was a little tenuous in terms of our depth. And, you know, I felt like in our experience, and we just knew that John was going to be out there the whole time, and whether he was playing safety, star, money, he was going to be out there. So we felt like, and the way we play, and Richard, I think, as you know, in the modern NFL, safeties are responsible for most of the communication anyway. I mean, they're the ones saying the most stuff, not the inside linebackers. That's not the way the game is anymore. So we just felt like using him in that way would be the best for the Rams. And I'm glad we did it, because I'll tell you what, there is no way we have that season without JJ is the green dot.
Yeah, I don't. Richard, let's move on just a little bit, because I know, Coach, I don't get him forever here. And we have some idea of what you're going to do on defense, right? We've seen you do that. You bring in Ronaldo Hill as your defensive coordinator. I think you have time with him in Denver, right? Is in the secondary. And of course, Vic Fangio, such a huge role model, the guy who really gave you your opportunity. And I think probably the number one thing that I see of Vic's that you do is, man, it is not easy to read what your coverages are as a quarterback. There's that mush period of a second or two where nobody really knows, is that corner, what's he doing, is that safety down, you know, what's happening here? And that sort of subtle disguise is a huge part of what you do on defense, isn't it?
Yeah, we want to make the quarterback operate post-snap. I think that's the one advantage that you can have on defensively, is when that ball hits the quarterback's hands, whether he's under the center and gun, is just making him to operate post-snap. Because if they know pre-snap what's happening, your odds aren't very good at being successful in this league, as Richard can attest. So just trying to make them operate post-snap and make it blurry by, you know, your rush account. And, you know, that's kind of what we believe in. And then R. Hill, Ronaldo, has just got such an awesome background, 10-year vet in the league, safety, played for a lot of good coaches. And again, offers that rich player experience. You know, a guy that I've learned a lot when we were in Denver just a year, just such a rich perspective as a former player. Hey, you know, like, this is what we really need to tell him. Hey, we don't need to tell him that. We'll get to that, you know. And just, I think, offering that lens, certainly for me, that's helped me in so many ways. And then now us getting to partner up together, I'm so excited. And You know, I think we've assembled a really good staff, but just, you know, so excited about R. Hill and I being able to team up.
We'll be right back to Brandon and Richard in just a minute. But first, we need to talk about some impending madness, as in March Madness, just a few weeks away now. And so it's time to get your sneakers on and prep for the hardwood. DraftKings Sportsbook, America's top-rated sportsbook app, is giving all new players a chance to cash $100. That's right, $100. $1 bet using promo code PFF. New customers can bet $1 on any team to hit just one three-pointer in any basketball game this week. And if your team makes it rain, you can cash $100. George, I don't know all that much about basketball, but I would say that's a bet that may be hard to lose.
Yeah, making it rain and hitting one three-pointer are not the same thing anymore. This is 2021. I would guess you can pick just about any team and they will hit at least one three-pointer because they're going to take 40. So, you know, the chances they make one are pretty high. So that's a no-brainer bet. But if you hate basketball, you're morally opposed to it, there's a lot of other good stuff out there. Even though there's no football, there's hockey, there's soccer, UEFA Champions League is starting up. So DraftKings Sportsbook has you covered for all of those things with odds boosts and other fun stuff. So you want to head over there, check it out, use promo code PFF, get that $100, and then use it wherever else you want to use it. But you should take advantage of it because you don't get a free $100 all that often. So promo code PFF for all new customers at the DraftKings Sportsbook. Reminder, you must be 21 or older, New Jersey, Indiana, Michigan, or Virginia. Only new customers are only allowed. Restrictions do apply. Winnings paid out in four $25 free bets. See DraftKings.com/sportsbook for details. And if you have a gambling problem, call 1-800-GAMBLER or in Indiana, 1-800-9-WITH-IT. In Virginia, 888-532-3500.
George Shahuri, the disclaimer king. Now let's go back to Brandon Staley and Richard Schiller. The other thing that I found really interesting was who is going to be your offensive coordinator, right? I mean, you basically could have cherry-picked from any system. You could have brought in somebody, and you picked the New Orleans Saints system. You picked Joe Lombardi to come in. Just give us a little background as to why you felt like that was the right fit.
Yeah, such an important decision. I think that, as you guys talked about, we want to be a team, you know, with the Chargers, not just a subcontracted side of the ball. And I think that the way we play on defense, you know, I think fits the way that kind of New Orleans plays on offense, a lot of different groupings, a lot of different ways to attack a particular opponent, balancing the run game and in the pass game, different types of passes, being able to take, you know, being able to push it down the field, being able to get an empty, spread you out, being able to get the ball to the backs. You know, what a great player Kamara has been, Sproles, Reggie Bush, you know, being able to, you know, force you to defend all 11 guys. That's something that I really believe in. And then certainly Joe's experience with Drew. I mean, as Richard will tell us, I'm sure, but that relationship with Drew really mattered to me. And Joe being there for, you know, so I think, you know, however many years he ended up being there, over a decade, that relationship really matters, because I think when you have a quarterback like we do with Justin, that relationship is so important moving forward. And I just thought that from a team perspective, the way we play on offense and defense would really fit well together.
And Richard, if I'm not mistaken, who did you say was your favorite of the rookie quarterbacks this year?
Oh, Justin Herbert, by far, far and away. I thought he was the most talented. I thought he was the most underrated. I didn't understand how he wasn't the number one guy, because for a while, his junior year, everybody knew he was the number one guy. He's going to be, you know, the number one quarterback taken. And then somewhere in the middle, people just fell off of him. And that may have been, you know, the national championship run that LSU went on, et cetera, et cetera. But I thought he had all the tools. And I watched him shred Stanford one game, and they lost. They lost. He was like, he had one of those games that A-Rod had against USC that year, where he went like 23 for 24 and was so efficient. But he went down the field, and our star corner, Adebo, batted one of the balls out late in the game. And I think that was like one of his first incompletion or second incompletion of the game. And he was shredding. I mean, hitting people in the face with the ball. And I was like, I've not seen a quarterback this in college play like this in a long time. And I was like, this has to be the consensus number one guy. And when he got to his opportunity in LA, and he did exactly what I thought he would do. I mean, he's faster and more athletic than people think. He has a huge arm. And he has confidence. He can throw it anywhere around the yard. And you got he got all the weapons he needs out there. You know, Keenan Allen is one of the best receivers in football and has been for probably, I don't know, the past 8 years, 7 years, and is always going to be criminally underrated and is always going to show up on somebody's highlight tape and giving somebody the blues. And I think that Justin Herbert is just going to make him flourish even more because he's going to give him more opportunities to shine. And I think that, I mean, you see their other receiver, was it Mike Williams, is freaking balling out with him. You know, I think he's elevated everybody.
Well, a couple references there. Love the A-Rod USC reference because I'm the same age as Aaron. So, like, that was a great game. I think he had like 18 or 22 straight completions or something like right. that. And just like lose at the end. That's an awesome comparison. In the draft work last year, I did a ton of work on, you know, these DBs. And Utah had an unbelievable defense last year. They're number two in the country. They had 9 guys out of 11 that are in NFL camps this year. And so I did a lot of work on those Utah guys. We drafted Terrell Burgess when I was with the Rams, who's going to be a fantastic player, safety, star, money type, versatile guy. And Herbert had an incredible Pac-12 championship game versus that defense. I mean, so you got like 9 NFL players that he's going against. So, you know, that, I mean, all these guys are playing in the NFL someday. And he just played, you know, he was the star of that game. You know, he was the guy that took over the game. He felt like a championship player. And I think there's a difference between being a, you know, a kind of a talented star and then being like a champion. And I think that he kind of took that game over and felt like one of these guys that can give you a chance every time you play.
It had to be a little bit of a strange decision for you. A, just staying in LA, but B, you've got Vic Fangio, who probably has as much to do with your success as any human being on earth, right? He gave you your first job. Basically, I think he ran the meetings, even when you were the outside linebacker coach, he kind of still came in for about the first half of the season and helped you run it. And then he was like, wait a minute, this kid's got it. And now you're running that. So you got to go back and you've got to play against him. Your defensive coordinator has got to play against Vic and that defense. But more importantly, you got to knock off the team that almost universally now people are saying can, for the next 15 years with Patrick Mahomes in there at quarterback, is anybody going to beat the Kansas City Chiefs? And that's a challenge. I mean, you're walking right into one of the biggest challenges in the NFL.
I think that's what makes the NFL so special. That's where the competition is. This is where the best in the world are. And I think that's the thing that I'm hopefully going to bring to our team, our organization, is that real competitors aren't worried about the competition. You know, they're worried about their own game, becoming as good as they can be. And I think that's where, like, our focus is right now, is becoming as good as we can be as a team and really getting the Chargers playing the way we want to play, getting our organization to operate, you know, the way that we kind of feel like it should operate. And really, you know, taking this off season to really establish that. And there's so much work that goes into that. And I think that, you know, if you study all the sports, all the great teams, you know, individuals over the course of the game, they want that competition. They want to play against the best people. They want to measure themselves. And certainly within our own division, we have that. And that's why it's so important that we get to work.
I mean, obviously playing for Vic, I only played for Vic 1 year at Stanford, and we go to the, you know, Stanford's never really been to any BCS games or done anything. And Jim brought a pretty much full NFL ready staff, pretty much the staff he was going to take to the league with him, and gave him a year in college and then left. But it was great for us. It was great for the guys who were older and senior and had been there and had been dealing with other staffs. And he brings such a, like, it's hard to describe Vic's personality because there isn't much to describe. I mean, you know, as a player, I haven't seen him, you know, outside football. But Vic's just like, hey, Richard, what the hell are you doing right here? Hey, be here. We got to make that tackle. All right, Jason, what are we doing? And he's so matter of fact. Like, it's not high, it's not low. It's just what you need to hear. It's like, here are the facts. Get your job done. This is the way we need to get it done to make the defense work. Either you can do it or you can't do it. If you can't, let's find somebody that can do it. And
like, I'll tell you what, Richard, like, so it, the beauty of Vic is his consistency. So all player, all anyone, all of us are looking for is just consistency. And he is that. And it's funny, Rich, we hired Michael Wilhoit as our linebackers coach here. So Hoyt was telling some great stories, and you know, I kind of have this saying, I'm like, hey, if someone's telling stories about you, that means you're probably pretty special. So Vic certainly meant a lot to me, and we all have our Vic stories, and there's good reason for it because he's one of the best.
Oh, by far. And I mean, he made me a better player, better defensive player, better understanding of defensive football and just angles and way to contain the football. But I think you guys, I think your team is underrated. I mean, the division is really strong in the AFC West. You know, obviously there's a lot of talent, but I don't think people understand that you guys have Bosa and Ingram. So you got the edge rushers to rush for. You got the secondary. Obviously, Derwin has been banged up. You got the linebackers. You got the receivers. You got the offensive line. You know, once again, just a little banged up. You got the quarterback. And I think, I don't think people, you know, I think you guys have a great chance of to go and be a true contender. I mean, maybe a piece or two to make you really, 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 a really good team.
Yeah, I think that's, you know, Richard, I think you hit on a bunch of things that are important because I think, and I think Tampa was a good illustration of it. You need a complete team in order to win. You can't just have one side of the ball featured. You know, you got to be a complete team in order to win. And I think Tom Telesco has done a really nice job of building a team. And like you said, a couple pieces, and that's, you know, certainly what the offseason is for, free agency and the draft. But I think there's so many foundational pieces that, as you know, you must have in order to compete in this league. You have to have foundational pieces like Joey and DJ, Kenneth Murray, who we drafted, Jerry Tillery, who I think is an up-and-coming guy. And then on offense, like you said, we've got guys that are young, and then we've got some proven players. You know, I think you got to have that nice balance of proven production and then up-and-coming, right, young players. And I think that we have that. And I think, you know, what you guys are talking about is real, is that we feel like we have a really good team, but now, you know, having pieces and then becoming a team, like those are different things. And that's what we're getting to work on, is becoming a team, building those relationships that are so important. And, you know, that's what we're going to be spending this offseason doing.
Hey, Brandon, can you hit on a little bit of some of these key guys? I mean, how's Derwin doing? You know, how's Ingram doing? How's Blaga doing? I mean, there were some really key pieces of that team that just weren't there a season ago, that if you add that back to the mix, right, and then along with whatever else you want to build, how are they doing, and how are you seeing the big picture of this thing right now?
Yeah, I think you hit on a couple of things. Like, number one, Derwin James, this DJ, he's rare. I mean, Richard will tell you, like, it's hard to stand out in the NFL. It's just very difficult for you to say, wow, like, that guy's different. And when you meet him, you see size, speed. He's got this vibrant, he's like a vibrant guy, just a really great guy. He and Ramsey are best friends. So I kind of got a head start with DJ through Jalen. And so, you know, he's got rare DB stuff because he's a DB. He's not just like a safety. This guy can do a lot. He's a DB. That's the way I view him. That's why I view Richard. You know, he's a DB. You know, he could play a lot of things. So he's a great place to start. But then, you know, like you mentioned with Brian, such a veteran player, played in a lot of big games, you know, protecting Aaron for all those years. And he gives you that steady presence, you know, playing in these big games and a pro's pro. I've got a chance to talk to him. He's a Chicago guy. My wife's from Chicago, he went to Iowa, and my cousin played with him. So, you know, just, I think that you touched on a bunch of things. You know, Chris Harris was injured, who I was with in Denver. Strap was injured. You know, he had a foot last year. And I think, you know, probably our biggest job is to get our team healthy. I think we have 56% of our cap on IR. We need to make sure that we have a healthy team. And that's all of our responsibility and making sure that happens. But I think that, you know, we've got a team right now that can compete. And what we've got to do this offseason is add a couple things and then come together. But it's exciting where we can go.
Yeah, and the question's always going to be about Justin, right? I'm going to give you, John Madden used to say, what are the yeah buts, right? So he's had a great rookie year and da-da-da and all that yeah, but most of what he did to flash this year was under pressure because he was phenomenal. He would escape, he would make plays, he had more completions, he had more yards than any quarterback in the league under pressure. The PFF data will also tell you that is the most unpredictable from year to year, that you can't count on that happening from year to year. So now the old school work of going back and teaching him how to play quarterback, right? How to make the consistent plays, how to make the plays on time and all the different things. What do you see as next steps for him in his career?
Yeah, Chris, I think the couple things that stand out to me, and I think would probably Richard would agree with, is he didn't get sacked a lot, which normally with rookie quarterbacks, they hold on to the football, right? They're not sure. They get sacked a lot. Well, Justin wasn't sacked very much last year. Number two, turnovers. This guy did not turn the ball over, okay, as a rookie player. This guy, you know, took care of the ball, both, you know, protecting it in the fumble game and interceptions. And then another thing that I felt like is a great sign, which I do think that you can count on year to year, is how he played in 2 minute. At the end of games, when you got to have it as a quarterback in this league, you got to have it. The special quarterbacks play well in 2 minute. And I thought that he was outstanding. Just before some of our games this year, we caught him versus like New Orleans. We caught him versus Atlanta. I thought he was, you know, against Vegas. He was really good at the end of games. And I think that that's a great sign for a young player at that position.
Yeah, I thought it was impressive. Just the way he was able to come in and take command with no offseason, no expectation, you know, really, because as Coach Lynn was saying, it was Tyrod. Every week it's Tyrod's team. It's Tyrod. Tyrod's our starters. And so even the game he started where Tyrod got his lung punctured, he should have been unprepared because, you know, you don't get the starter reps in practice, which means a lot and mean even more when you're a rookie quarterback. You know, you're a rookie quarterback. You're taking all the scout team reps. You're doing this. You got no expectation of playing. So for him to come out and play as well as he did without all the structure of the offseason and somebody to really sit there and drill it into his head day in and day out, hey, this is what we need you to do. These are your reads. And I think that's why they didn't give him the opportunity to start. But he played like he had an offseason. He played like he had everything he needed, and he was really prepared. So I look forward to seeing what he will be able to do just without the panic of being a rookie and all that, and have an offseason of hopefully some semblance of structure.
He's got a really good head on his shoulders. I think that's something like meeting him in person and being around him now is he's got a really good head on his shoulders. And then I think this is something that's really important, certainly to me, but I think to Richard, Chris, you guys that have been in locker rooms, played with special players, is he's one of the guys too now. The way his teammates talk about him, I'm talking about veterans like Chris Harris, Linval Joseph, guys that have played a long time on the other side of the ball. And then his offensive line, you know, the way they talk about him as a worker, as a teammate, his humility, and then his work ethic, all that good stuff. He's one of the guys, and I think the best quarterbacks in the league, in the history of the league, they're one of the guys. And I think that certainly he's got a chance. And now it's, you know, going back to work at his game. I mean, now we really got to go back and, I mean, really get to work at his game and build it up again. And so that's what we're excited to get going on.
I want you to give me 2 minutes on Sean McVay. I mean, here's a guy that Sean gets excited about a lot of things, right? But when we were talking to him about you, he was really excited. Like there was such a, you could tell that you were like kindred spirits, like you were the same guy almost. Explain that relationship and how it all happened.
Well, it's hard to believe that we've only known each other a year. I'd never met him prior to me interviewing with him, but it felt like, you know, it's one of those things where you felt like you've known someone your whole life. So I think that us being able to team up, it was amazing that we had never connected before that. So he means a lot to me. You all have people that like sort of shape you and sort of help you, you know, ultimately get to where you want to go. And he's certainly one of those people for me, us being able to team up and really compete. You know, I think that we really competed in such a, you know, a consistent way every day. It was this healthy competition though, and making each other better and really stretching and pushing each other and thinking about things a little bit differently. And, you know, he's a guy that is such a global guy in terms of how he thinks. And whether it was ball, you know, offense, defense, situational stuff, whatever, how to build a team, how to run, you know, an off season, or whether it was other stuff, the books that we read, the places we go, the people that we meet. I just think that we were kind of aligned that way. I think our styles are different, but I think that our passion.
Hand signals are about the same, though. The way you talk is still about the same. You got it. Richard, do you hear me? You know what I'm saying?
I know exactly what you're saying.
he's wired. He's really wired. I don't know if I can compete with his energy, but you know, certainly I love him like a brother, and you know, so thankful for him.
So I heard an interview you did one time, and I don't know if this was just a slip of the tongue or not, but you said something about when I was in first grade reading the sports page and drinking a cup of coffee, I knew that I wanted to be a head football coach in the National Football League. You weren't really drinking a cup of coffee at breakfast as a first grader, were you?
I wish that were not true. And maybe that prevented me from being like six, like maybe a 6'3", 6'4" guy. Maybe that's why I'm a 6-footer. But you know, no, it's true. I wanted to be like my dad. My parents were my heroes, and that's what my dad did. He woke up early, you know, went, got the newspaper, got some coffee, and started, you know, reading the sports page. And that's what I tried to do, because I wanted to be just like him, because my parents were my heroes. You know, I've said it before, but, you know, people talk about coaching trees, and, you know, I'm from the Bruce and Linda Staley coaching tree. And that's the real, that's real. That's why I'm here. They're the reason why I'm here. And so I was a young coffee drinker. Now, listen, it wasn't like black coffee, guys. I was putting some cream and sugar in it to make it taste pretty good. And I still do. I still do to this day. But, you know, it certainly, I think, Chris, if you look back and you talk to my family, my brothers, my dad, they'll tell you that you know, I was kind of on my way.
Richard, I don't know about you, but I just went full Captain Crunch in the morning. I just wanted to have that sugar high.
Yeah, I went full Frosted Flakes, you know, Cinnamon Toast Crunch.
You know, Brandon, last question for you. I know you got to run off and build your team here, but you would have had other opportunities. I mean, I know for a fact, because coaches and owners call me all the time, because I'm one of the few people in the world that actually gets to talk to all you guys, you know? And so I know there were other teams that were interested in having you as the head coach. Why the Chargers? Why did you settle in so quickly there?
I think that what my wife and I and my family and I were after, Chris, was someone that wanted us for us. And I wanted to try to express myself in the interviews to the best of my ability. And I felt like the Spanos family, Tom Telesco, Ed McGuire, that group really, you know, really had a shared vision of how we wanted to run a team, how we viewed offense, defense, and the kicking game, how we viewed relationships with players, being involved in the community, making a difference, and how we wanted to do it, more importantly. And I think there was just a comfort level there, and I felt like it was very easy chemistry. And I think the deeper that we went into it, it became clear that that's where we were meant to be. And it's because of, you know, I think that shared vision and who we are. And I think so many times as a competitor, you go into a situation and it's like, they kind of want the idea of you, but they don't want all of you. You know, they like the idea of you. And I thought that the Chargers, they wanted the Staley family. And that's why ultimately we're so happy that it worked out.
Yeah, well, don't respond to this question I'm about to make here, because if you do, there's tampering, and I've already we've gone into this too many times here. So I'm just going to make a statement here. But if you're ever interested, you know, in one of those veteran guys who knows everything about defense, could be the assistant general manager, the assistant head coach, the head locker room coordinator. I know a guy. I'm not going to tell you who it is, but I do know a guy.
Hey, listen, I think this is such a beautiful question to finish with, because the smiles on our faces just say it all. So, you know, and that's what makes, I'll tell you what, that's what makes the NFL so special is when you smile like this, there's just a lot of respect.
There's a ton of respect, nothing but respect, Coach. And I look forward to seeing you guys perform. I look forward to seeing what Justin has in his second year, because I'm a big fan. And you guys have a great defense, and I think people are getting a good feel for what to do with Kansas City. You know, obviously putting it, you know, into play and getting it done is a whole different story. But I don't know. I like you guys' chances, and I appreciate you coming on.
No, thanks so much for having me, guys. I appreciate it. It's been awesome.
Knock 'em dead out there, man. Good luck.
Thanks a lot, guys.
All right, now, as only we can do on podcasts, there's always a little introductory moment that happens before we go on the podcast where everybody says hi. And of course, when you get two guys as passionate about football as what Brandon Staley and Richard Sherman are, they immediately ran off into the wilderness talking ball. And I thought it was one of the best parts of the whole show. It's not official. So this is the unofficial back end, second chance to hear them talk ball between Brandon Staley and Richard Sherman. They okayed it. So here we go. Let's eavesdrop in on their opening conversation.
He's like a lot stronger than you think he is.
You know
who we're talking about?
McLaurin, Richard.
Terry. Oh, man.
This guy's good, man.
He's really good. He's really good, and he plays hard all the time.
So, Richard, I made this tape when we played them because he was kind of like their guy. Like, they didn't really have a lot around him. So I kind of showed him, you know, kind of gassing up like Gilmore and like some of these, like Slay and like some of these other guys, you know. So I was like, hey, now, like Ramsey, like, I'm just telling you, this guy can freaking roll. No, he's fast, okay?
He's faster than you think.
Way faster than you think. Really good after the catch. And then I was like, guys, he runs hard. He's not like some of these other ones that kind of float and drift. I'm like, he's running. And
right.
I think that guy's really good.
If he had anybody else beside him and they couldn't just double him and cloud him all the time, he'd be special. But I mean, yeah. That's the hard thing. They can't find anybody else. You know, they got a bunch of guys who kind of flash, but he plays hard. When we played him, they had Alex, and Alex really wouldn't take any shots with him. So he just kept running like banana cuts and digs, and yeah, right. we were all over that, but he's one of the better up and coming wideouts in the league for sure.
I tell you, the guy that personifies that though is Tyreek. Tyreek, and I've never seen anybody. I mean, I've been going to practices my whole life. I have never seen anybody that can run as hard, as fast, and as consistently as he does in practice, games. It's no wonder that they can time out all those big plays, because he's at the exact same speed in practice that he is in games. It's unbelievable. I don't know how he keeps his body together.
Yeah, it's remarkable because because he's got speed, but he's not a build speed guy. He's at his speed so fast. And I think that's what's so tough for people, is because he's got that initial quickness, but then he's got the gas fast. I mean, he's already at full speed right now. And then he's a stronger player than you think. I mean, he's also, for like a smaller guy, he's stronger than you think he is. And then, I mean, you know, then he's got that guy that can put it wherever and whenever. And so it just, I mean, it's kind of a perfect combination. But, you know, Vic, I mean, he's been doing it 30 years. And I mean, you know, when he's saying, I have not seen someone like this guy, and that includes, you know, and just in a different way, like Moss and stuff like that, all these other guys, like, he's unique. Like, he's his own guy. There hasn't been anybody like him. You know, that's kind of saying something, I think. So
it is for sure. I tell you what, that was stunning to watch them keep him out of the end zone for that Super Bowl. It was like,
yeah. But Richard, you guys put the cuffs on him. You know, I mean, you guys did a good job on him. I mean, you know, the last one.
Yeah, we had a good plan for him, and it was just the same plan they had. When you got four that can rush, you just put the top over the defense, make him walk it down the field, and put pressure on him. And that's exactly what they did. They had the front four to do it. You know, everybody was bringing pressure. JPP collapsing the edges, Shaq collapsing the edges, Sue in the inside. They did a great job, and you just got to keep caps on them, make them keep running those read routes and stopping and making them catch them. And then, you know, obviously at the end, they got that dagger 7 on us on 4th and 15. And it was just a mistake, you know, by our guy. We knew the concept. That's the only concept they had on 3rd and 14 plus.
And that's something.
Right. And we ran it multiple times. I never saw it throughout the week, but you know, our coaches knew 3rd and 15. I'm deep as the deepest, you know, whoever's number two is, that's how deep I am.
They ran it against us when we were in Denver that same year, Richard, like same circumstance, same situation. I mean, I think all of us that were playing them knew that, hey, and especially if he's in there, you know, like if he's in there, I mean, because they didn't do it with like the other guys really. So
nobody else could get there in time.
No one else can get there. That's what and then I see everybody like, so everyone's trying to replicate this route. I'm like, guys, they can't make it there. You know, like, so like Seattle put Metcalf there and he's a guy that can get there.
Right.
But we had it, we kind of, if you guys watch our film from, I think it was the third game that we played him, they ran it. They kind of motioned to a two-man stack. Like he was out as the Z and then he motioned into the slot. And then he was the, you know, he was that a pylon runner. And then Lockett was the in route runner. And But like again, you're talking about two guys that can get there. You know, like there's just not a lot of guys right. that have deep speed. So
and it makes it obvious when he's in the slot. It's like that's not where he's going to be doing anything else. Either he's at three running the special or he's at one.
Right.
What is he doing at two? It should be odd.
No, it's
you know because.
Yeah. No, it's such a good point too. And then there's the other factor is that like Russ and like Pat are two of the guys that can get the ball there. You know, there's a lot of that are really good players that can't get it there accurately, even if a guy's open, because it's such a deep throw.
Exactly. And it's a deep time and throw. Like if you miscalculate it, if you think it in a corner can get there, it's over. It's an easy pick. But yeah, it was a good plan by them. They can be stopped, obviously, but, you know, throughout the season, not many people can rush four like that. I think with the Rams, you guys would have had a chance, you know, with obviously AD and Brockers and all the boys and, you know, your front four was getting after it.
I think the thing that you guys also did a good job of, too, like that year, and I think that Tampa did that I think is like an underrated part of like what happened is like they didn't give up any loose plays to Mahomes, you know, like they didn't give up those loose play, you know, second scramble, you know, sort of that off schedule stuff. And I thought that in the Super Bowl, that was something that you guys did a really good job of when you played them, was just there wasn't a lot of like, because that's how he hurts you as much as anything, is that second play. And Tampa, I thought Tampa did a really good job staying connected in coverage. And then, you know, the rush obviously was expressing itself, but then they were staying connected and coverage, and I thought that was an underrated part of their success.
Oh, for sure. And I think the human element of him just getting hit all game.
Yeah.
You know, he was already banged up coming into it, and they just kept getting hits on him. It wasn't just the sacks. It's the just play after play, like no matter what, get the ball off, don't get the ball off, you're getting hit. And even the roughing a passer they took where everybody converged and met at the quarterback, I thought that was the pivotal, like, hey, this is over with.
Yeah, no doubt. It you know, it had a feeling of, for a little bit there, now they didn't have quite the group that you guys have, but it was kind of like when y'all smoked Denver, it had that feeling of like, man, there's just nowhere to go today. Like, you know, like all their main stuff, like all those signature plays, like, cause I remember Denver's, all those signature plays against you guys, like that they had, you know, like you guys were ready for them. I mean, you were there waiting on them. And then, I mean, there was just there was that physicality that ended up taking over in that game. And I thought that now Tampa is not as nearly the same group as you guys, but like, it kind of felt the same.
Like, it felt like that to me. Their linebackers were flying. It felt like they had 12 people on the field. Both linebackers are criminally underrated, and they were everywhere. They got to show the peak of their potential. The DBs were tackling well, the corners were everywhere, the safeties were making great open field tackles. There wasn't any leaky yardage. That's when it feels like that, when it's like, hey, and then Tom was being Tom.
And I tell you what, you hit on a great point though too against them, which I think like you must have to beat Kansas City, because those five eligibles are so good, is you have to have linebackers that can run. So like Bobby and KJ, you got Levante and Devin. I mean, like, you got to have that to match up with Kelsey, or because you know how much they put Tyreek at three and Sammy, like they're inside a lot. So, you know, like if you're playing five DBs somehow, some way, a linebacker is going to be on somebody, you know, and, you know, you better, you know, I think that's something that is so underrated. And like, even like when Vic was in San Fran all those years, when they had Navarro and Pat, you know, you get a tandem like that. And I think what people don't understand about the NFL is like, you better have linebackers that can run, man. Like,
right.
Zone, it's really, you know, like in even where you're at now with Fred and Dre Greenlaw, and those guys can roll, man.
100%. That's the new age NFL. It's not the like 6'4", 260 pound like maulers anymore. It's they got to be 6'2", 235, you know, it would run in 4'4", 4'5", and be able to guard three on a special, you know, whether it's a receiver or a tight end, be able to run through these gaps, be able to guard these running backs who are incredibly athletic. But how are you liking your new digs?
Hey man, it's going great. We finally got the ball, you know, we got the staff here. So we finally, you know, started ball like yesterday, you know, kind of got the staff onboarded last week, and then, you know, just kind of get everybody's feet on the ground, get the COVID protocols kind of set in place. And, you know, I mean, there's that onboarding process of HR, get your video, get your office uploaded. So kind of had an onboarding week last week. And then, you know, yesterday was kind of our first day of doing ball.
Nice, nice. You, how far did you have to move down the street?
We're in the process of moving, but it's like an hour and a half drive, Richard. So like, cause we're like north. So like, if you keep going west, like where Calabasas is, you got to keep going west to where the Rams facility is. So yeah. I'm like, I'm 25 minutes west of Calabasas. So you got to take the 101 down the 405. So it's like an hour and a half. So not bad at all. But like, if you know how it is, if rain, traffic, it can become two pretty quick to, you know, but it's, I know my wife is thankful. I'm not like flying to the East Coast in a snowstorm, for sure. So it's worked out.
Right, right. LA traffic is the worst. That's why I stopped coming down there, man. I don't know how you're doing it.
No, well, I'm from Cleveland, Ohio, bro. So, I mean, it's definitely a new experience. And I don't even know it because this is a pandemic. I haven't even like seen the real traffic. So that's why I got to get down to Orange County. So I, you know, sort of avoid it. Hey, I got an unbelievable clip. So we've got like, so you versus Arizona at Seattle, you know, like double post spear, you double post, you know, over. Got you just playing, splitting the zone, depth and divider. Like you just freaking eating up this crosser route. Cause we're putting in like our, you know, like the way we identify route concepts today. So I got a great, like Richard Sherman from a single receiver. Like, you know, which one I'm talking about too.
Yes. I know exactly what you're talking about.
Exactly
which
one I'm talking about. This is when I was back in like Division 3, teaching my guys how to play. This is like a retro Richard Sherman clip. So
hey, come on now. Hey, you put me in this zone. I can read it out.
And I'll tell you what, I got a great, the last thing, and I really do got to get to go, but then I've got an awesome, like a post safety, why you run, like sort of middle of, you know, you batting that ball in the back of the end zone and then you guys getting the pick off the bat, you know, like
right.
all time. And
that's an all time why you run. That's teach tape why you run.
It's an all time middle of the field example. And, you know, and so I just want you to know that long before I was in the NFL, we were cooking up Richard Sherman examples. So
I appreciate that. Much respect, Coach, and good luck to everything.
All right, guys. Take care.
I told you that was fantastic. It was fun just listening to those two guys talk ball. And please join us again next week. We've got the general manager of the resurgent Buffalo Bills, who came very close to a Super Bowl this season. We're going to talk with Brandon Bean with Richard Sherman next week. Hope you join us.